Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going good. Welcome, everybody, to episode two of the QAS.
Yeah, we're not going to do any goofing here. We're just going to get straight into it because this is a long episode.
Yes.
You ever sit down with somebody talking about, you're talking about a trip, and then you realize like an hour's gone by?
So we won't take too much time.
So we won't take too much of his time. So Kayak USA, Q-A-J-A-Q, Kayak USA, Tim Galloway.
Okay.
I've been friends with Tim since the first time I went down there and met him. He's into the Greenland paddling and Greenland kayaks and the whole meal deal. He loves kayaking. Well, he was there doing a presentation at the Quiet Adventure Symposium, first thing in the morning, solo kayaking the Main Island Trail. So I'm thinking, what's the Main Island Trail? That sounds interesting.
It's got to be in Maine.
So when he was done his chat,
yeah,
I quickly ran over to the booth and said, hey, you got time to chat?
You ran?
I had to run. It's not like I could walk anywhere. Yeah, it wasn't I didn't say it was a pretty run. Look at that guy go!
So graceful.
Graceful as a dead penguin. And twice as fast.
Anyway.
I zipped out to talk to Tim and say, hey, dude, like to come over and sit in my booth and chit-chat about the main island trail. And he said, sure, I'll see you just after lunch. And after lunch, he showed up. We sat down and we talked about it. And it was quite interesting. The Main Island Trail is a recreational water trail. It spans the entire coast of Maine, connecting over 200 islands. The mainland sites available for day visits and overnight camping, 375 miles or 604 kilometers. The trail is operated by the Main Island Trail Association, a nonprofit membership organization based in Portland, Maine, with over 6,000 members. Trail properties are owned by private landowners, conservation organizations, and federal, state, and municipal agencies. It's cool. It's a lot of things. Now, one of the things he does talk about, and you'll listen to it in the interview, is he had to quickly learn and realize about tides.
Oh, yes, right? Absolutely. That's a big learning curve there.
Yeah, so it was nice to sit down with him and chit-chat, knowing nothing about this trail and whatnot, and his experiences on it, and asked him a few questions about a few different things, and next thing you know, yeah, it's like an hour's gone by. So, So not going to chat too much. But this is my interview with Tim Galloway on the solo kayaking the Main Island Trail. All right, joining me now is Tim Galloway from Kayak USA. How you doing, Tim?
Hello, I'm doing good.
Apparently, you listen to the show.
I do on occasion, yeah. I've been trying to... I knew I was going to be seeing you this weekend, so I'm like, I should probably listen to a couple of the more recent episodes.
Oh, so you haven't started at one and work your way off to 471.
I don't think I have the will to do that, sorry to say.
If you would have started way back then, because I've known you for a number of years.
It's been a while, yeah. I drop in and out of your streaming queue. But
every so often. Yeah.
You've had some good stuff the last little bit, like talking about the... like the reservations and stuff. That's interesting. It's like that's always something I think about. It's just access. How do you get people out to these places?
Right.
It's always
And that was one of my things today was get out there. Here's the benefits and that sort of stuff. So that was my waterway stewardship as well.
Absolutely.
Right? That's because there's nothing turns you off more than putting your boat in somewhere and seeing garbage everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Right. Do you guys carry like a mesh bag or something wherever you go?
Why would I do that when it's easier just to throw everything right in my boat?
There you go. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I'm not used to having a huge space.
A canoe, I do. Yeah, I just. And then
spare tires and body parts.
Body parts. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not allowed to bring body parts home anymore.
Not after the last time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, leave them there or bury them somewhere. Leave them for the animals. Whatever. Don't bring home. Look at that corpse.
Honey,
it followed me home. Can I keep it?
Well, we got off track real quick.
Oh, anyway. Squirrel! you did a thing, solo kayaking the main island trail.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to sit here, and I'm going to sip on my Powerade that I've been nursing for the last so many hours, and I'm going to listen to you yabber on like we yabber on.
Here we go. Okay.
All right. Tell us about solo kayaking the main island trail.
Yeah, so last summer of 2024, I paddled from Portland, Maine, up to Machias, Maine.
Okay.
So it's about it was on my presentation this morning. I can't remember it now. about 335 miles or so. I was 20 days on the trail. That was 15 paddling days and 5 0 days. And it all started back a number of years ago. I was working in Maine for about 6 weeks, so I had a couple weekends I could go out and play, and I met up with some paddlers and got out and looked at this place and went, wow, this is gorgeous, like islands and tidal streams and birds and porpoises and seals, like it's a perfect paddling environment.
Especially with the animals too, right?
Yeah, like I'm a Great Lakes paddler, so
yeah,
seeing megafauna in the water is totally new and different. And so I've had this in the back of my head for a couple of years that if I want to do an ocean trip and wanted to go to Maine.
I mean, right.
It's a beautiful place. So last summer I committed to it, went out and launched on a Sunday and headed out along the coast. And the shoreline is so dynamic there. There's all these bays and islands and river mouths and a 12 to 14 foot tide.
Right.
A lot of water flowing in and out, up and down, left and right, everywhere. So there's very few times that I wasn't noticing some sort of tidal current.
And you got, I did a thing a few years ago about tides on sea, and it's like, oh, yeah, because if you're used to, like, Great Lakes paddling and stuff, all of a sudden you got to take this extra thing into.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm used to paddling on the lakes where we have relatively straight shorelines,
mm-hmm.
some islands here and there. But you get up as early as you can will yourself awake to beat the wind,
right?
Wind is is everything
yes.
in the lakes. And out there, the wind was relatively consistent. It would build into the afternoon and kind of die off. But sometimes the tide kind of would force your hand. It means, all right, you're up at 5 a.m.
Right.
to catch the tide at a certain stage. Or you're getting off the water at early afternoon or lunchtime because it doesn't make sense to keep going. And that learning curve for me was the really exciting thing of doing a multi-day, multi-week trip in a tidal environment. And I met some amazing people on the way and, talked to some fishermen and, paddled in a couple tide races, one on accident. And
accident, yeah.
Yeah, and kind of goes along the same thing. I'm still not used to paddling tides.
Right.
Even after being out there a few weeks, I am still a total novice and learning it. I can do okay, but that experience has now rewired how I'm thinking about trips. It makes me want more. I want to get out and do more.
More
ocean.
Ocean stuff.
Yeah, dealing with the tides, multi-day
trip.
You're
hooked now.
They got their salty little hooks into me, and now I can't escape it. I don't know. But I'm still kind of thinking about Maine a lot because I'm working on a vlog series for it. I filmed it a lot. So I've done trip series when I went to Greenland and Lake Superior and canoe trip in Mississinabia. I have series on YouTube of all of those. And so I'm working through the footage now for Maine. So I'm reliving it kind of like a day at a time again. And I'm like, oh, geez, I did not make a good call there.
you know what? That's the big thing is being able to pick that out and go, oh, yeah, that wasn't. I need to learn that for next time and remembering for next time.
Yeah.
Right?
The learning experience, again, is the big thing. I think back to a trip I did on Lake Superior a couple of years ago. It was about a month on the trip, but it was Lake Superior, and I know Lake Superior. I've been paddling it for as long as I've been a paddler.
Right.
So I kind of know its moods. I know what to expect. And that trip was very much a pile everything in and go without a whole lot of specific planning.
Yeah.
Can't do that in Maine.
No.
Everything has to be thought through of what time's the tide going to be high or low, what's the shape of your route, are you going around a headland, are you going up a river, because all these things will either push you along or stop you dead in your tracks. and oh, I love it.
It's, and you solo kayak this.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing we always think about, and we don't think of, we don't really think about it too much, but I think you'd have to think about it more, is on that trip, water.
Absolutely. Yeah, water right. was a challenge.
So you got to carry that.
Yeah, I think I had, I tallied it up at one point, I think I had like 17 or 18, or the capacity to haul 17 or 18 liters of water.
That's a lot.
But if you think about it, that's, you know, 4 liters a day, 3 liters yeah. a day, so, you know, a gallon. So I could be out there for 4 days.
Well, because you're okay. using it for cooking and drinking and yeah, you want to do some washing or
bit
something.
Of hygiene every night to get the yeah. salt off you before you yeah. put dry clothes on. So, and the tough thing about Maine is there is very little fresh surface water on the coast.
Right.
Almost none. Because all these rivers that flow in and out, they're huge, high-volume rivers, but they're all tidal.
Yes.
So you'd have to go so far inland and often like up and over a rapid or something to get into actual fresh water.
Not worth the time.
Right. And Maine is not a wilderness trip. It's there's a lot of towns along the way and harbors and marinas all over. So getting water wasn't too bad.
Okay.
But I did have one time where I think it was day three of being kind of out. And I'd refilled and I was going across Muskungus Bay and it was hot. The right. first week of the trip was super hot and windy. And so like I had salt crusting on me because I was getting sprayed and it was gross. And I got to this island and I was going to camp there because it said there in the guidebook I had that there was a lodge.
Okay.
You know, a private lodge, but you could, you know, camp on the side of the property. And it said, water available. Cool. So I got into shore, hauled the kayak up the last little bit of tide, tidal beach, got it up on the bank. All right, I'm going to go fill up my water bags first thing before I do anything else. Walked over the, you know, quarter mile or so to the lodge. Open the spigot. Nothing.
Oh, no.
And then I'm like, all right, don't panic. Walked around to the other side. Opened that spigot. Nothing there. Knocked on the door. No one was there. Like, water was shut off. And I had a gallon of water left. So I was okay.
But
it was like, all right, this is... I was almost thinking, like, do I need to paddle up the river to get to the town to, like, refill? And I was like, nah, I'll be paddling by a harbor tomorrow morning. I can refill if I need it.
Right.
But, yeah, again, one of those things.
Well, it's one of those things you put in the back of your mind saying, mm-hmm. okay, so, taken from this, when I have 1 gallon left, make sure I'm filling up these other
right.
3 gallons sort of thing.
Right.
So that I'm always,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting, I'm always not going to be stuck. Because you don't want to be figuring out, oh,
when you're
I've
empty,
got no
yeah.
gallons left,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, I can get something tomorrow, but I need something today.
Right.
Right.
And, yeah, it was that, yeah, because I'm so used to just, well, I'm a little thirsty, I'll just, could almost just scoop right out of the lake.
Scoop out of the lake, okay. Or even get your water yeah. filter going for a quick minute. Or
yeah, exactly. It's never been
dealing
something.
With salt water.
Yeah, never something yeah. I've had to think about. It's a whole other
like, oh, let me just whip out my desalinator here. And
I remember you guys talking about the paddleboarder in Baja
yeah.
that did the big trip,
yeah.
and water was the big thing. And I looked up that desalinator,
yeah.
and I just thought, wow, this guy went for it. Like that, just sitting there pumping water at the 1,000 PSI or whatever it takes to desalinate yeah. it by hand. Wow, that was something cool.
That's like, yeah.
I was thinking about that when I was out on the trip. Like,
yeah, that's a deal breaker for me.
Yeah,
I just want to drink my water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny. I'm thinking about this, like, oh, tide, salt water, and all this. And like, I know so many people, old salties, that are just like, yeah, and?
Yeah.
Oh, this is what you do.
Yeah, yeah. So. There's. I mean, when they're doing that all the time.
Right.
It's just second nature.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, like, up here, we talk about canoe trippers, like, somebody coming here who's never had to deal with it, going into the, well, what about all the moose and the bears and the wolves? And,
it's like, yeah, they're there.
Yeah, they're there. And, you know, uh-huh. and we were just talking, next to us is, they're talking about Mississippi and stuff, doing, mm-hmm. Seeing alligators.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, what do you do when you get, oh, they're there.
Yeah. Leave them you alone.
Know? Yeah, leave them alone and just watch out when they get too close. Mm-hmm. But other than that,
don't try to wrestle them.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were going to do. We were supposed to try to go down to the Texas Water Safari this year, but people's schedules didn't match up. And I'm like, Derek said I'm not allowed to pet the alligators. So
I think you should listen to that guy every now and then.
Yeah. So yeah, so the people that are out there paddling the coast all the time, it's just second nature to them now.
Right.
So, but it's stuff that you've got to keep thinking about. Otherwise, tide goes out and you're that. So how far out where the tide's going? Like if you got stuck at low tide out there.
Depends. I mean, the terrain along that coast is very mixed.
Right.
There's some large tidal estuaries that you could absolutely get stuck up, you know, on a bank somewhere. But other areas are cliffs. So you're going up and down. You're not going in and out.
Going out. Right.
So for the most part, I didn't have to deal too much with, you know, a kilometer of a carry to get up to a camp. For the most part, with a couple of pretty major exceptions, I was able to time it okay,
right,
to be up a certain level, so I didn't have to go, you know, too far of a hike. But there was one day when I had a zero day, where right. I met a couple other paddlers that were up there, and we went paddling out at this area, Petit Manan Point. It's down east, as they call it, so quite a ways down the coast. This point sticks way out. There's a lighthouse on an island off the point.
Cool.
It has a puffin colony.
Oh,
on
okay.
It's really neat. There was a dead fin whale washed up on shore. Like, okay, this place is real. Like,
right?
This is cool.
This is like National Geographic happening here.
And so we launched. We timed it just perfectly. We launched at low tide and had like a, I don't know, 400-meter carry or something, 200-meter carry down across mud flat way, way out there. And, you know, so we had to do that three times, I think, to get all of our kayaks down. But then we landed that afternoon right at high tide.
Perfect.
So it was just like, oh, hop right off. It's perfect. So, like, that, I think that was the longest carry we had, and I'm really happy that it was with an empty kayak.
Right.
And a couple other guys. So it wasn't too bad of a deal.
Well, you have to do it once to say you experienced it.
Right. And the mud there was not too deep. You know, it was a couple inches of squishiness, yeah. A little smelly. But there were some other spots where it definitely, like, it could eat your boots.
Yeah. Were you wearing a dry suit? Or just...
No, I usually was... I did have the idea to bring bibs.
Okay.
Dry bibs. But, like, the first week especially, I'm glad I didn't pack them. The first week was so hot, especially, like, into the 90s Fahrenheit, you know,
okay.
Upper 20s, low 30s Celsius. It was hot and windy and kind of miserable.
Yeah.
Which I was not expecting for Maine.
Yeah.
I was told by a friend of mine that that coast of Maine, that time of year, expect Lake Superior conditions.
Okay.
And I went, okay, that, I mean, and for the most part, it was accurate. But that first week and a bit, it was so hot. So I was in neoprene shorts, rash guard, maybe a dry top.
Mother Nature is just messing with you, dude.
Yeah, exactly. So I was running out of water all the time. Just like, this wasn't in the...
Oh, guzzling, man.
This wasn't in the pamphlets.
Yeah.
But then as the trip went on, I kind of think of it as three pieces. You have week one, which is hot and windy.
Right.
Week two, which was foggy and rainy. And then week three, which was mixed.
Right.
It was still foggy and a little bit of rain, but it was a lot nicer.
Right.
And so going from that super hot, windy, dry, parching conditions to then paddling in heavy rain and thick pea soup fog, total whiplash, but so, so great. That transition to the fog, especially. Like, navigation, I know you guys talk about navigation all the time. I am very much a chart and compass guy. Yeah, like, I did have my phone with me so I could, and
if
accessible.
Need be.
If I need be, I could pull up and be like, oh, I am here. But
I see, that's what we talk about. We say, bring it for safety.
Right.
But don't rely on that. Try the, and as I say, go analog.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, map and compass. Go analog. Like, do it that way. I love paddling in fog, thick fog.
Yeah.
And not knowing what's out there. Because
mm-hmm.
that's just kind
yeah,
of cool. And then hoping on this long day, you're actually farther along than you think you are.
Yeah. It's like I had on the one day of a really good fog, and it was, I'm going to say my favorite day of the trip, I had a bunch of crossings back to back to back to back from island to small island to small island, like 2 miles at most,
okay.
Usually about a mile. So like, you know, 20 minutes to 40 minutes of paddling, and the rain had blown through, so the sea state had laid down.
Perfect.
It was cloudy and drizzly and, you know, fog rolling in and out, and it was so beautiful going through these islands and the mist kind of ripping through the tops of the pine trees. Just gorgeous. But there were some times where well, I think there's an island ahead of me. And I think there's an island ahead of me because I can hear it. Or the sea state changed or right. something. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep paddling on my course because it should be there. And then, yep, there it is. You see a little smudge. You're like, right. all right, that's a boulder. All right, going to go away from that. Like, look for trees.
There's a little bit of darkness over there. It's exactly. got to be something.
Exactly.
Right.
And the weird thing with that sort of navigation in Maine, especially, is there's boat traffic out there.
Well, that's what I was going to ask so about that.
Boat. Yeah, lobster yeah. boats.
Yes.
Everywhere. Like, there was rarely a time I was out of the earshot of a rumbling lobster boat, which is very charming and interesting. But you also have to pay some attention to them and where they're going because they're working.
You need that situational awareness exactly. thing going on full time.
And I learned from someone out there is they have, on the bow of the boat, they have their buoy colors.
Okay.
Because every lobster boat has a pattern for their buoys, and a lot of them will have that buoy up on their bow or up on their pilot house.
Right.
So you can see, like, all right, they are following this line, and they lay them in line. So, like, all right, that's the red and the white and the red and the green. Okay, I know that pattern that's going that way.
So you
stay out of their way.
Right.
But on a couple of these crossings I did where you're paddling for half an hour with no landmarks just on that compass line, and then you just hear... You're like, oh, where are they? You're looking right. around. Like, I think they're to the right of me a couple hundred meters. And then you're like, oh, they revved up. Okay, they're over there. They're going away.
They're going away.
Like, so, along those lines, like lobster buoys. I don't think I was ever out of sight of a lobster buoy.
Wow.
The whole trip.
I know we went down to Maine. I mean, one of our stops was this really fancy... seafood place. Yeah, and we got that lobster going.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. I mean, if you're there, you got
mm-hmm. yeah, it. I had a couple lobster rolls. Yeah, a couple lobster rolls. It was good.
Yeah.
Recovery meal of the best sort.
So you continued on, mm-hmm. Enjoying that. And I had a question there. The coastline.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do any fishing or anything while you were there, or was it just straight paddling?
It was straight paddling. I've tried fishing on trips before, and I mean, it just comes down to priorities. Like
yeah.
My goal of that trip was to explore the coast.
Right.
So I was my goal was to move, and always try to be moving, exploring, and getting down the coast. So
right.
If I was planning on base camping somewhere, then yeah, maybe bring a hand line or a fishing line or something. But in the way I think of it, especially in a sea kayak, if you catch a fish, it kind of ruins the rest of your afternoon. You know, like, you got to deal with it, you got to get it in, you got to clean it, you got to
right.
cook it, you got to deal with the entrails and everything. Like, it's a process to handle that.
Right.
So, yeah, I usually just...
I like to paddle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that when you're looking at a new place like that... The geology and geography is so different than what mm-hmm. you're used to. You have to be sitting there just enjoying
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and especially when you're saying, like, the cliffs and the mm-hmm. and the bays as opposed to, like, tiny little bays. You're looking
yeah.
at these big bays mm-hmm. and yeah. all the archipelago island spots.
And I'm definitely a coastal paddler. I like to get in close
yeah.
when it's safe to do so.
Right.
I like to see things. Like, I know some people that... They did a similar sort of route, but they stayed way offshore and headland to headland style. And
right.
Great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. But like, I like to be in close. I like to see stuff, especially there where so much is new and different.
Well, you don't know what kind of nature you're going to see right along the shoreline, too.
Right. And you know, I saw seals quite often. I saw porpoises. The scariest moments on the trip. I mean, there were some times and some conditions that were like, all right, I don't want to be here. But the ones for pure shock factor were, I don't know if it's the right word, but a fish blow.
Okay.
So some big predator or a predatory fish or something underwater is pushing a shoal of smaller fish up to the surface, and they kind of hit a critical mass, and then they all just explode out of the water in this chaotic, you know, it's like if you put water on a snare drum.
It's like the circle that a whale does, blowing the bubbles.
Yeah, it looks like that. The fish are just hopping out.
Next thing you know, you're being eaten by a whale.
I had that thought. And so there'd be a couple times where I'd just be cruising along, look, there's an eagle over there. Oh, it's so calm and beautiful. And then just commotion and splashing all to the side, you know, a boat length away. Oh, just fish.
Yeah.
Son of a gun, that scared the crap out of me. All right, keep going.
They're all down there talking to their buddies. Did you see the look on his face?
The punk fish. Jeez. Yeah, but again, it's another one of those things that we don't really have that sort of thing,
right?
In the Great Lakes. I did on the St. Mary's River once up by St. Marie. I did have a sturgeon breach right in front of me.
Right.
It was like a 4 foot long.
Those are big, yeah.
And just whoop, right out of the water, splashed. Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know the sturgeon did that, but that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you actually see, like, did any of the bigger guys, like any whales, porpoises, and that come next to you? Like, how close did the seals and that get to you?
The seals.
Do you think they're going to be a bit more
seals
curious?
Were pretty wary, actually.
Oh, yeah?
I did go by a couple colonies of seals here and there, especially the further down east you go, more remote, isolated islands, especially in an area, the Sally Islands, between Frenchman Bay and Petit Manan Point. Really pretty little archipelago. And in the easternmost islands of that, there were some seals some islands that had 30, 40 seals on them.
Wow.
And, you know, some pups or yearling pups that were, you know, smaller. And so they were cool. I tried to, you know, leave no trace, paddle a ways away and observe. But even 100 meters out, they were watching me. They were diving in the water. They did not like me being there.
Right. Predator.
And yeah. the funniest, though, with a seal is in the morning I left Portland. I was paddling between a couple islands, and there was a tidal stream pulling a lobster buoy. And I was going by it, and I thought there was like a log or something stuck on this lobster buoy. It had this big brown thing on it. And I paddled up closer, and then I realized, oh, that's a seal, and it has its front flipper wrapped around the line, just holding on.
He's probably having a snooze.
Yeah, I think he was like examining the bottom or looking for fish or something. He's just sitting there, and just eventually, you know, I was a boat length away. It looked up and kind of looked over its shoulder and had a delayed moment of realization and went, and dove. I don't know if it's me remembering it this way or what, but like I swear its eyebrows went up. It was shocked. Like it might have cursed a little bit in seal language and then dove
and
immediately.
Dove.
But just it was so funny because it was definitely a oh crap moment before it got away.
See, we're not the only ones that have that.
Right, yes, that seal was the most.
Every member of the animal kingdom has an oh crap moment.
I saw that seal have one.
And again, he's with his buddies talking.
Yep.
Oh my God, you won't believe.
He got so close, didn't hear him or anything.
Sneaky. You gotta don't turn your back on him. So you except for the one time you did total solo.
Yeah, I had a couple of my zero days. So I was staying with some friends that I met along the way.
Right.
You know, for a day on shore, resupply sort of thing. But we still went paddling.
As one does.
Yeah, so we did a day trip. What town was that? South of Rockport, out to this chain of islands. Really cool.
Okay.
And then the second one was, Petit Manan Point, where the dead whale was in the puffin colony. So, yeah. But otherwise, all the days actually moving on the trip were all solo.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, seeing the dead whale there, that's got to be.
It was neat.
Okay. Did you go up to it?
Oh, yeah.
Did you touch it?
No. It smelled so bad.
And?
I'm sure you would touch it.
But, and yeah. Now you're going to be thinking that, I should have poked it.
Should have poked it. I mean, I was close enough to it. But so that whale had washed in on that point in a winter storm.
Okay.
You know, 6 months or something before.
Ooh.
And then it had been further out on the point for a month or two or something. And then a storm came and it washed it back out. And so apparently all the locals were like on a lookout for this whale that was likely floating around in the bay somewhere. I mean, because the thing was 40 feet long. So
for a dead whale, it made a lot of progress.
Right. So you're thinking like, oh, you know, but if a boat hits this, like, do some serious damage. So all the locals were keeping an eye out. And then, yeah, the next storm came through and washed it further into the bay and higher up on the beach. And it's been there ever since.
As far as you know.
So, unless it's gotten up and moved around again. But, I mean, there wasn't much left.
Right.
I mean, it's skeleton with
things beneath it.
Yeah, with a kind of a almost like a tent of dried skin stretched over parts of it.
I still would have poked it.
I'm sure, yeah. But just, I mean, just seeing the jawbones on the thing, it was huge. And that's the thing about that sort of whale is like their head is like a third of their length. Or something.
Yeah. But it's still, I mean, cool to see nature taking its course too, right?
Yeah, and yeah, you can tell the scavengers have been all over it and just been drying out. And you can, you know, you think about the, like, the documentaries about whale fall, where the orcas would kill a gray whale or something and its carcass falls and all the life that comes to it.
Like, strips it. Totally.
Yeah, thinking, you know, all the lobsters and things in the bottom were probably chewing on that for a while when it was getting pushed around the bay.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen somewhere they get washed up on shore, and then you get like the local wolf pack, sort of thing, right? You've seen those documentaries where they're it just shows how much something like that can help out everything else,
or like in the Arctic, in the Inuit communities, the polar bears coming up and eagles, and it's amazing to see. And I was that was not on my bingo card to come across a
one dead
fin whale. But I was glad I saw it.
What about the puffins? Was it a whole colony? You got close enough to get photos and stuff?
Close enough to see them. I didn't have my good camera out as I was paddling, but did see them. And it was an awfully... So it was out on Petit Manan Island, which supposedly is the foggiest lighthouse on the East Coast.
Okay.
So a lot of... I don't know, you're more likely to not see it anywhere to see it sort of thing.
Right.
It's always socked in. And... on the one end of the island, just this, we were looking for them. We didn't see them for a while, but they were like roosting boxes or something on shore. And there was a gull colony or a tern colony or something else, and some guillemots as well out there, you know, which look puffin-like but aren't not as cool, not as charismatic.
Not as cool.
Yeah, right. But then all of a sudden we're like, oh, there was one. Oh, there's another one. There's another one. And it was, it was a nice little cherry on top for that day to be like, oh, geez, I wasn't expecting to see puffins out here.
Well, again, it's something that you don't get to see normally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole cool thing about going somewhere new.
Right.
Is you're seeing all these little things, which, I mean, you've seen them on the nature documentaries. You know what they are.
But to be there in person.
But to actually see them live and in person, that's just like real. And to see them from your boat, you know, that's just cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you... would you do this trip again?
Absolutely.
What was the ultimate highlights? Starting and everything in between.
Oh, jeez. Well, so like my favorite overall day, doing all my crossings from Warren Island State Park down to Stonington. So in the fog, a lot of navigation. Like that was probably my favorite overall day. But I'd say in general, the further east I got, the better it got.
Really?
So a little bit more remote. I mean, there's still houses and harbors and stuff out there, but it just got quieter. The island's a little more windswept. There were actually like some islands that looked almost like Scotland or Ireland or something, just like barren and grass. You know, that's all they are. So the nature of the trail was changing. I think I would go back and probably go further east because I actually didn't finish finished. I didn't do the whole Main Island Trail.
Okay.
The trail officially ends in Lubeck, which is across right on the border with Canada.
Right.
So, but the last 30 miles of that is, they call it the Bold Coast. And they call it the Bold Coast because it's very exposed. There's a couple little bays, a couple little coves, one or two spots to camp over that 20 to 30 miles.
Right.
Very few outs, and it's very cliffy almost the whole way.
So you got to be mighty bold to be...
You have to be bold to head out on that coast.
Right.
So I got to this spot, Cross Island, which is like one of the last kind of camping spots before the Bold Coast. And I was looking at the weather, I was looking at the tides, the wind and the fog, and my wife was going to come out and pick me up in 2 days.
Right.
So I was like, all right, well, if I go for it, I have to kind of do it all at once, because if I get stuck, then she has to wait for me. I'm like, I don't want to do that. And the high tide was really late in the day. The low tide was really late in the day.
Right.
So I had to wait until the low tide to be able to finish the last leg of it to go up the river a little to Lubeck.
Right.
And the currents tend to flow up and down the coast depending on the tide, so I might have a bit of a current all day. and the fog was rolling in and out a lot while I was there, and so all these things, like, nah, it doesn't make sense for me to try this. If I had 3 days or right. 4 days, like, oh yeah, I'd go for it, but it just... And it didn't feel right.
Can you run the trail in both directions?
Absolutely.
As in start in Lübeck next time?
Absolutely. Yeah. That might be a good way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, and it's the same thing. It's just the prevailing winds right. are typically out of the west, so you might have more days into the wind. But, hey, whatever. It's, you know, filling in the
you're
white spot
there,
on the map.
You're having some fun.
Yeah.
That sort of deal.
But that spot that I stayed for, I had a weather day out there while I was contemplating doing the Bold Coast. It's an old Coast Guard station.
Okay.
So it's now owned by Hurricane Island Outward Bound School.
Right.
So they use it as like a base camp for adventures they do out there with their kids. And so they had a, you know, the lodge building. So I was able to go in, get out of the rain a little bit and stuff. But across the water from them, through this little channel, is the Naval... Actually, I'm trying to remember the full name of it. The Naval Communications and Computing Center. So it's this array of 24 giant antennas.
Oh.
Ultra low frequency antennas.
Okay.
And the Navy uses it to communicate with submarines in the Atlantic, like underwater.
Right.
The super low frequency can get through the salt water. And in the fog, all you see are these glowing lights, red lights blinking.
That's cool.
Up at the very top of the fog. So you'd be standing on shore, like, thinking, geez, am I going to get abducted here? Like, are these aliens coming to get me? And then you're like, oh, wait.
We got another one!
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so it was a really atmospheric place just to hang out and see these lights and the just knowing these antennas are here. It's like, oh, this is really cool. It's like, kind of, again, out of my comfort zone. Like, I'm not used to seeing this. This is something different. And then when I finally did head out, you know, I had a 4-hour paddle up this tidal river to Machias, and it was fog, but it was really glassy calm, and the sun was shining through it, and it's breaking up. It was a really pretty way.
It's nice to
finish like that.
Yeah, it's nice to be paddling as the fog breaks up.
Yeah, exactly. Something poetic about yeah. that in some way.
Yeah.
And as usual, I always like to point this out. You know, trips like this never end with a fanfare.
Yep.
At least, you know, you come ashore and there's no one there. You know, I pulled up at this little county park on the side of the river and unloaded my kayak and dried some stuff off as best I could and just hung out till my wife showed up. And
it's because you're at the wrong beach. The trumpets and everything were down.
Yeah.
They were down the lake.
Yeah,
lake.
The New Englanders would be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's nothing new there, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, that's some of the best adventures are it's your adventure.
And I was right. really working to make this my adventure. Like, I did a lot of things that were for me. Like, I was trying to put my ego on hold as much as possible
yeah.
to, like, not push myself unless I wanted to,
yeah.
not feel obligated to do
well,
a
on trips like out of your comfort zone, you just say, like, you got to think.
The judgment, you know? Is so important on that
yeah.
sort of trip.
One little...
Especially solo.
Yeah. One little thing can totally mm-hmm. turn it.
I was thinking about that, too. It was like, if I did this trip with someone, it would make it so different.
Yeah.
Just because all of a sudden, maybe, like, yeah, Bold Coast, let's go
let's
for
do it.
Let's do it. You know, or, oh, there's this tide race between these islands. Like, hey, let's unload. Let's go play for a little bit. You know, like,
yeah.
you make such different decisions
yeah.
alone versus with a group.
Well, I was talking in my presentation today and talking about going out solo and stuff like that. And that's what somebody, well, what do you do for safety when you're out there? As in what?
Yeah, safe from what?
Safe from what?
My own bad decisions?
From my own bad decisions? Nothing different than I do every other day.
Right.
But, you know, you take, make sure you got your spot unit or mm-hmm. something like that, or a Zaleo or a Garmin, whatever. Make sure that you're double-thinking things before you do it.
Right.
You don't take the unnecessary risks.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that you're looking at.
If you hesitate at all.
Right,
you gotta stop and go. Yeah. Why am I hesitating?
If there's that little thought niggling in your brain,
mm-hmm.
you don't.
Right,
right,
exactly.
I mean, it may look doable, and you may push yourself into it. There's the whole risk factor thing, mm-hmm. right? And you have to be able to analyze those risk factors, because if you don't,
mm-hmm. no one else
different.
Is.
There's no one there to help you.
I had a good example of this on my, it's like the third day or fourth day of the trip. I was coming up to a point called Pemaquid Point, just east of Booth Bay Harbor, if you want to look for it. And it sticks way out south into the Atlantic. And I was camped, and a big storm pushed through, and a front came, and the winds were strong out of the south. The wave forecast was saying 4 to 7 feet on open water coming into this point. And so you have a river on one side and a bay on the other. So current against wind out on this very exposed point, like not looking good, especially with the sea state. And that night, as I was thinking through all this, like, I'm going to get stuck here for a day or two. Like, oh, what can I do? Like, oh, it sucks. And I was looking at my map, and I saw Maine Kayak Company has an outfit, like, rental station on this harbor just on the base of the point. And I went, oh, I stopped by and talked to those guys this morning in Booth Bay. I'm going to call them up. It's like, oh, well, maybe they could just portage me.
Right?
So I called them up and explained what I was doing, and they went, oh, yeah, we'll figure something out. And Alva, the owner, came out and picked me up, and he portaged me on his truck just like a mile to the other side of the points. You know, shook hands and said, hey, thanks, buddy, and hopped back in the water. And so I saved 12 miles of very open, very exposed.
Now you go back and do that.
Big, big sea state paddling. And carried on my day without getting stuck.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, if I was a younger paddler, not knowing what I know now, I either would have sat or tried.
Right.
And I've washed up on enough beaches in my day to be okay with asking for help.
Yeah. You know, and that's exactly what it is. If you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, on one hand, they say you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah,
right. And you're going to go for it.
And I didn't
until you find out.
Right. In that case, like, is it really going to be 4 to 7 feet? Is it really going to be the wind forecast they were saying? Like, is it really as bad as the guidebook says? The guidebook had been pretty accurate so far. Other people had mentioned that point to me. Like, no, not. And that's I mean, the trip was for me. I wanted to paddle. I didn't want to sit if I didn't have to.
And if you got enough 0 days built in,
right?
Then if something happens, then instead of the 0 day,
and I had
2 days from now, today's my 0 day.
Yeah, and I had no specific endpoint,
right?
So I could stop wherever I wanted,
right?
And that freedom to stop and wait was remarkable. You know, it's not a wilderness trip where you have to get somewhere,
right?
But in my haste of packing, I did revert to the wilderness style food packing. So I think I had 2 full weeks of food in my kayak at one point. I was very heavy.
At least you didn't have to portage it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Unloaded that, threw it on the truck, off you go. Yeah.
I mean, if you got the thing from point A to point B, and I have to make it that far, in a place like that, then if you only get from point A to point A and 3/4, mm-hmm. and then there's nothing. And I've talked to somebody else about this. Is there's nothing saying you can't come back and do that last quarter at another time to finish
Absolutely.
That? Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so maybe you didn't do it all in one go, but it's better than being dead,
right?
Unless you go for that sort of thing. But my opinion is better than being dead, mm-hmm. right? You come back and you finish it another time.
Yep.
Or maybe somebody comes back with you later mm-hmm. and said, "Oh, I got to go back and do the rest of this," like you did.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, get new people into it, have fun.
Yeah.
Make the trip whatever you want it to be.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's there's been a bit of that going on lately, as people are just like, point A, point B, point A, point B, like as fast as you can, or enjoy it.
Yeah, I actually did an interview for the Kinacopia stuff coming up next week, and that was a big thing we talked about is paddling, whatever paddling you do, sup, canoe, kayak, outrigger, whatever, you can make it your thing to go out and look at the birds and take photos or spearfish off of it or something. You can go expedition. You can whitewater. You can whitewater to class 6, or you can run the Tsangpo River in Tibet, or you can float down your local river and not even notice.
Yeah, that has shopping carts that make little rapids.
Yeah, exactly. you can take it as far as you want.
Yeah.
And the more I paddle and meet people, I think that's what I'm trying to get myself to accept. Like, I'm doing this for me.
Yeah.
And
you know, I've been doing a lot of that last couple of years. Is, you know what? I'm going out to have fun, to see what I'm paddling through. You know, I've been on enough trips where it's like, okay, we got to get from this lake to this lake by the end of the day.
Right.
And it's just like, now it's like, okay, I'm bringing that lake a little bit closer that we're staying on, because that gives us time to be lazy and maybe
have some pancakes for breakfast.
Yeah, you know, just relax sort of deal. And you're not just, I mean, we're still go, go, go. You know, like, okay, we'll have four paddle days, then a rest day, as opposed to paddle day, rest day, paddle day, rest day sort of thing.
Because you burn yourself out from your first big day.
Right? So, but no, so you're just, you know, you're having smaller days, but you're taking the time to, okay, well, I'm going to take this roundabout way to get here instead of that straight way to make farther distance. Enjoy it. Make it for yourself. See what's there. Because a lot of these places as well, what are the actual chances of you getting back there? Unless it's pretty close to you.
Right.
What are the chances of you getting back there anytime soon?
Yeah.
To do it slower.
Yeah, like Maine, I mean, that'd be a... That's another, it's a big commitment to get out there, just drive right out there, or yeah, fly, or take the train, or whatever. So, yeah, you've got to enjoy it as right much as you can there, and not
slow
have the
down
regret of
yeah
missing it.
So when yeah you're, when you're on the ocean there, calm days versus big wave days?
You could have both in the same, yeah, often very close together.
So that's what I was saying. Is it like mornings? I mean, sometimes we go in on the lakes, and it's like, okay, you got to get up early and paddle before, because, oh, look, it's 2 o'clock. The winds are starting.
That wind pattern was pretty consistent. You'd have the sea breeze as the land warmed up.
Right.
Something I found that was, again, a little different from what I'm used to on the lakes. I feel like on the lakes, if you're paddling and you have a wind building, it will keep building until it stops building.
Right.
And then it diminishes. So, like, yeah, 3 or 4 in the afternoon, it could be blowing, and then it will fade off.
Right.
Out in Maine, the winds were more consistent. So okay, you have, it might be calm in the morning, but then it'll build to 10 knots, and it will stay there.
Right.
Or it'll hang out there for a while.
Right.
And then it will diminish, or then it will change. So that consistency was really great, because then I'm like, oh, it's not...
You can plan around
it. Yeah, it's not saying 10 knots, but on the Great Lakes, that means it's going to blow to 20 and then drop. It's going to... You know, it's actually going to be that.
Right.
And the usual pattern of it was I get going, get up around a headland or something, and that's where the conditions would be big, and that's where the timing of the tide comes in really important. You want to be around those points at slack water, one
right
way or the other, usually at low tide. Then you could ride the currents into a bay or into a river or whatever. And with that, you'd have these conditions where I could go from pretty decent swell, 3, 4 feet, 5 feet sometimes. Sometimes it was a big base swell.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, 3 feet, 1 meter wave, and then you'd have a wind chop in another direction. So it could be a little chaotic in times.
Right.
But then you'd get around a point or an island, and that could disappear almost entirely. And it could be calm for a while. And then you get out of the lee of that island, and it could build back
and
up.
It's all
or
back,
it get reflected.
Yeah.
Or you could, yeah, you go further into a bay, and it calms down.
Right.
So that variety of going from some pretty fun, sporty, decent conditions to mill pond.
Right.
In a few hours. And then back and forth, potentially. I had one time where I guess I was getting a little cocky near the end of the trip, and I was going past... I was just past Jonesport going east, and I was paddling up the channel west of Roque Island, as it's called. It's a really cool, like, horseshoe, round-shaped island. And I was cruising along and went, oh, I want to get over to Roque. A friend of mine said it's really, really cool. And I just went, yep, I'm going to go for it, not thinking, oh, yeah, there's wind out of the south, the tide's going out, kind of messy in there. Ah, hell, go. and just charged it, and then I got to the other side, it calmed down again. I'm like, well, that was stupid. Why did I do that? I'm like, but I got here. Like, okay, that was and that was one of those things, like, I didn't hesitate, because I'm like, oh, this would be fine. I should have hesitated there.
Right.
But that was another thing. I threw that in the memory bank.
All right. For next time.
I will now hesitate with this sort of condition. That was what I should have. I absolutely should have known that.
Oops.
Yeah, exactly.
one of the things that I'm always fascinated with, lighthouses. When you're plenty cruising down. Mm-hmm. Plenty of lighthouses. Any really cool ones?
I think someone said this. One of them that Forrest Gump ran to. Is that one of them? I think so. I think I paddled right by. I don't remember which one it was. I paddled right by that one. There's a ton of them. And a lot of variety in the shape and size.
Right.
I feel like, at least in parts of the upper Great Lakes, there's a couple styles depending on the vintage.
Yes.
So, like, the Whitefish Point Lighthouse and the Manitou Island Light.
Yeah.
Manitou Island's right off the very tip of the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Yeah.
Those two lighthouses look almost identical. The same kind of scaffold structure on the tower. And, you know, see other similar ones.
I mean, you get either just the tall tower or
the single tower.
The house is attached and all that. Or the, you know, are they round? Are they square?
Yeah. And so you can tell the vintage of them and if they're manned or not now and stuff. But out there, like, every one seems quite different.
Right.
And it was just it was a cool thing to see, the variety in it. I think the Petit Manan Lighthouse that I talked about earlier, that was one of the cool ones, just because it did have the bird colonies on it. Fog was rolling in and out. It was very spooky looking off on the horizon as we came up to it.
Was the light going?
It was going. I mean, it was daytime when we were paddling by, so you couldn't see it very much. The reason that lighthouse was there, so the lighthouse is on the island. It's about 2 miles from this point. And between the point and the lighthouse is a shoal that's, 3 or 4 meters deep.
Okay.
At most. Or berries in there. And you can see it on this chart, this shallowest bit between there. And all the guidebooks, all the charts have, you know, skulls and crossbones and stuff all around them. And the reason that lighthouse is there is as a warning to go around that shoal. So if you have, like, a southwest swell and an ebb tide, the tide against the current will, or the wind against the current will hit on that shoal.
Right.
And you could have like a 2 mile stretch of breaking water.
Okay.
Just chaotic, tumbling waves there. And then you get past it and it calms right down on either side. And so we went out to that lighthouse and paddled the rock gardens around it and then paddled back and kind of skirted that line. You'd have this big, even swell, and then you're like, oh, we're over the shoal now,
right?
And it would stack up a little more. It wasn't breaking, but it was just it was one of those things like, oh, yeah, like this is real. Like, I see why they have this lighthouse here.
It's one thing to do it in a kayak as opposed to a big boat.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if the boat was big enough, you would ground on it.
Yeah.
Or if the tide was low, especially.
Yeah.
Seeing that relation, I mean, you see it in the Great Lakes as well, why you have a lighthouse in a certain place. But, like, that one was so obvious that this place is destroyed boats.
Right. Did you see any shipwrecks along the way?
I don't think so. I don't think so. There might have been a couple in a harbor here and there, or pulled up on shore. I mean, there's derelict vessels floating all over.
Like in Superior and stuff, or even Tobermory, we're up there.
Right.
You're paddling and you look down and there's the wreck of something.
I don't think so. I don't think I saw any wrecks. Okay. I wasn't looking too closely.
I'm not going now.
Throw the trip away.
Forget this. So if somebody was thinking of doing this trip, again, the main island trail, besides learning tides, what other suggestions would you have them research?
There's a ton of great outfitters out there. And a bunch of, I stopped by and talked to a lot of them. They gave me some great information about the local conditions, Portland Paddle in Portland. They're a big outfitter. I actually parked my car with them while I was there. Maine Kayak, Sea Kayak Stonington, Pinniped Kayaks. Like, there's a ton of great outfitters, great paddlers out there. I always recommend talk to a local. Local paddlers are great. Fishermen are great. Sailors. Talk to someone that spends time on the water. Even if it's not exactly what you're doing, they will know something really
important. Well, they'll know. Yeah.
They'll know, like, oh, don't go there. You'll get stuck. Don't go there. Big waves. Whatever. Talk to locals. The other thing to think about is Maine has such a dynamic coast. You can pick and choose your adventure very specifically. So if you want to go out and go paddling along the cliffs and work in these really cliffy rock garden areas. There's some great areas to do that and really push your skills with maneuvering and challenging environment like that, like especially right. around Acadia. There's amazing rock gardening in that area. If you want to paddle rivers, like there's these big tidal rivers that you can go up and down, you know, with minimal challenging conditions. You know, there are some tide races you got to watch out for.
Right.
But and there's tidal estuaries, you know, very calm. Look for fish, look for crabs. You can, you know, you can pick and choose whatever you want to do to whatever skill level you have.
Right.
But with that, yeah, the tide dictates everything.
That, yeah, that would be the biggest learning thing is tides.
Right.
Right. So, but it sounds like you had a blast.
I absolutely did.
And when are you going back?
Well, so I don't want to give away what my next big trip plan is, because it's still it a lot of logistics to figure out for it. But it would be an international trip, and okay. so I feel like Maine was a really great practice environment to learn the tides, learn the that sort of environment, so that I can apply it elsewhere. And I'm really glad I did Maine now. Now that I, like, all right, this I have a base that I can work from. And my wife actually kind of was brought this up, like, because a couple of years ago, summer of 2021, now summer 2020, I was planning on doing. I had all these plans and charts marked, and most of my logistics figured out to paddle in Scotland.
Oh,
do a couple week trip in the Inner Hebrides, and then COVID hit,
right.
So that got scuttled. And so that's why the next year I did Superior, because travel restrictions were still yeah. a big problem. So I'm like, all right, got to keep logistics as simple as possible. I'll stay in my state, do that. And now looking back at it, I'm like, I'm really glad I did Maine before I did Scotland.
Well, Scotland, as far as I know, Scotland's not going anywhere.
Scotland's
so,
not going anywhere.
You know.
But it has comparable conditions to Maine.
See?
Big tidal conditions, a lot of currents.
Yeah,
challenging shorelines. So, like, I feel like it's a decent enough analog.
Hey, you got time to touch base with some other paddling groups over there to say, hey, here's what.
Right. So, if there's anybody listening, let me know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, my next big one is in a tidal environment, colder than Maine. But I'm trying to figure out logistics, so I'm not gonna talk about it yet. But when I do, I'll get in touch.
So we're gonna see you next. Quite Adventure Symposium, and
it'll probably be 2020.
The one after that,
it might be 2026. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of falling into a rut of doing a trip every year. Oh no,
it's fun to do though. Like, you know,
we glorify these big trips. But,
yeah,
I mean, listening to the last couple of your episodes, like the your summer paddling
project every
project,
weekend. Yeah,
that sounds so
I got
cool.
42 different locations already.
That's amazing.
I don't think there's that many weekends.
Yeah. You're going to be breaking ice at both ends of the season.
There's pictures of being on frozen lakes and somebody leaning over the front with a hatchet.
Yeah, exactly. Get some ice axes and just drag yourself
right?
along.
I need a Bauman.
I think you can make that happen.
I think that can happen, yeah. All right, Tim. Lovely to have you on here.
Thanks for having me.
Great. And I didn't bring Alan Drummond to break your balance.
My balance board again?
Yeah.
I just told that story just like an hour ago.
Oh, did you? Every time I come here and go over there and I see that, that's all I think about is,
hey, remember that time Drummond broke that?
That time Alan broke that thing.
I've sent him some photos. I think I said
you sent him
a photo
as well.
Of
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I remember yeah. that. Notice how that didn't break?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Proper technique, I tell you.
Before I let you go here, yeah. where can people find you?
People can find me at YouTube and Instagram and Facebook, I guess, mainly on YouTube and Instagram. Kayak to the Sea.
Okay.
Just like Paddle to the Sea, but kayak. I've got a whole bunch of series. I've got a vlog series about going to Greenland, one on Lake Superior, paddling in Missinabe, which, you know, bring that up. We'll talk about Missinabe
at
some time.
Yeah.
And I'm currently working on the one for Maine. It's a lot of footage to sift through and put together. So that'll be coming hopefully not too long in the next month or two.
Cool. So. And Kayak USA.
Kayak USA, yeah. It's a nonprofit volunteer organization I'm a member of. and we're all about promoting and advancing traditional kayaking skills in North America. So,
excellent.
Greenland kayaking with paddles and skin on frames and everything associated.
And it's Q-A-J-A-Q.
Correct. The right spelling of kayak.
The right spelling. Or how do they say it in Greenland?
Kayak.
See?
Yeah.
I knew it was different than...
Just, it's a, the accent's a little different.
You gotta have that Greenland accent.
It's the same word.
Yeah. Awesome.
Hunter's boat.
Tim, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Doesn't that make you absolutely want to go and
well,
do that?
It absolutely does. So, again, I wasn't present for the interview, but just in the discussions of it, it reminds me, I grew up in New Brunswick, mm-hmm. and throughout my youth and younger, earlier years, I spent a lot of time in Maine. And so we would, there's always shopping trips and camping trips, and I did a lot of camping. There's a desert in Maine. I camped there. And so there's, family friends, we would go and sail down the coast and spend there's 3 different summers where we spent 2 weeks sailing down the coast into Maine, like Bar Harbor and so on. You kind of stay off the coast in a sailboat. You're not going to go in and around like you would with a kayak. But I want to hear this interview because I always was fascinated. Like, you look at the coast of Maine, and it's a bunch of fingers of land, of rock that juts out into the ocean. And so it's like you're sailing by, and it's like, oh, look at that. You can see all these finger headlands that are pointing out at you, right? And so it's...
Which if you're in a kayak, you could zip in and out and follow.
It would be fascinating.
But in a sailboat, you're not.
And like you said earlier, like the learning curve for tides, because I had to learn tides when we did all the sailing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, like on the East Coast, and especially growing up in New Brunswick, you had to know the tides, right? Because it's some of the highest tides in the world. But yeah, it would be fascinating to figure out how to safely get in and out through all these fingers of headlands coming off of Maine. It's all forested area. It's a beautiful area. So I'm
well. You know, he's talking when he's talking about the weather. He's talking about the fog and the lighthouses and everything like that. Having to stop and get water because unless you're going way up a river.
To the
point where the salt water stops and the fresh water is sort of deal, but you're not doing that. So you carry your water for, so many days.
And that's the problem is getting the water. So.
Yeah. So it was, I really enjoyed sitting with Tim and hearing what he had to say on that. It really enlightened me on coastal traveling like that. And sounds fun.
Yes.
He seemed to have a blast.
Yeah.
So
it's a beautiful area.
Yeah. Alrighty. We'll be back next week with our third and final installment of the Quiet Adventure Symposium episodes. This was, like I say, I sat down, thought, okay, well, chit-chat with them for about 20 minutes or so. And then looking down when we finished talking and an hour had gone by. It's like, not hard to do.
Yeah.
Not hard to do. So, again, thank you very much, Tim, for... dropping by and having a chit chat with me on this. It sounds like you had a blast, and if you're going back, I'll want to hear the end of it all. In the meantime, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or you can download or stream our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.